lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for episode 158. Ooh, broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streaming to you live on the web at songtalk.ca/livestream. Song Talk Radio is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of, guess what?
Songwriting.
Yes. There'll be a quiz after the show. Brand new songwriters or established professionals, and on the show we share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become just a little bit better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and joining me tonight are the mathematical members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. We got Binary Bruce.
Are you saying something about my sexuality?
Just pick one or zero.
Okay, Bruce. Thank you.
Yeah. Fraction,
I'm Binary Bruce.
Yes, we have
I'm
Fraction
either on
Phil.
Or I'm off. Go ahead.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm 9/10 here.
In my intense here, and handling your social media onslaught tonight, Variable Vanessa.
Ooh. Ooh, variables. That's trigonometry, isn't it?
And
that's no, it's algebra,
math.
Mostly.
Algebra.
Yeah. Okay. And finally, but not fewer, as opposed to
yes.
last
what
but not least.
What about the board, on the board?
Equation eton.
Equation, all right.
All right.
And never for the guest. David's looking at me with great anticipation.
I got like, one. I could be differential David.
Differential
okay.
David.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Wow. He's going like advanced calculus here.
Okay.
On this. And of course, during the show, join in the conversation. Send in your comments, questions, or equations to Song Talk Radio on Twitter, and we'll share them in real time. I think there's a math font on Twitter, isn't there? No?
No, probably.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. And please stop by our website at songtalk.ca. Find out how you can be a guest on our show. Differential David.
Yeah. you said mathematics, and I was like, oh, did you, like, know my background?
Oh, that's right. You're a mathematician?
Yeah,
I'm that's right. I did know that.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
So,
wow.
I thought you prepared it.
Okay.
So,
prove it.
Yes, you
yeah.
did.
Prove
no,
it.
No,
what's,
he knows
what's 4
how
plus
many,
8?
A lot. A dozen.
Ooh.
Six of one.
But also, you're probably very good at counting bars in
yeah.
a song. Like, you know when there's 12 because, you know, there's three fours.
All right. Does anyone want to hear his written intro? You want to
Why
read
not?
It, David?
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right. David St. Bernard, differential David St. Bernard, considers himself to be a karaoke enthusiast who appreciates a well-constructed song. He has spent the last 15 years honing his craft by performing at open mics, reading music theory books, attending songwriting workshops, and above all, playing covers of other people's tunes.
Ah.
Well, welcome, David.
I did. Hey. No covers tonight. No covers allowed.
All right. Serious business now. Okay, so what music theory books have you read and what workshops have you attended? Let us know.
Well, I wouldn't list all of them. I would list the probably
your
most
favorites.
Important one.
Yeah.
Was How to Write Songs on Guitar, and I'm blanking on the name of the author.
How to Write Songs on guitar.
On guitar. It's a
okay.
very...
It's a good title. It's catchy.
Yeah. There's this one page in it which brought me to the next level of writing songs. In particular, finding the chords within a key.
Oh.
And it numbered the 12 normal chords that you would play in a key. So you have, you know, 1 to 6, major, minor, minor, major, major, minor. But mm-hmm. then it gives you those other flavorful
Oh, like the sevenths
chords.
And the
oh.
and the
actually
suspendeds
called?
And stuff like that.
Are those not called the replacement? What do you call those? We had a whole show on that.
Well, we're not talking about substitutions.
No, we're not talking about substitution chords.
Extensions.
Extensions, right.
So not the extensions.
Like a demented
okay.
ninth.
It's not the extensions.
Not the extensions. So instead, they would say that, you know what, it's okay if you play the second as a major, or if you play the
yes.
third as a major, the fourth as a minor.
Yes.
And there were three others, which I haven't ventured in as much. But just having that as like, okay, here's a key, here are your 12 chords, go for it. And
right.
it just opened my writing.
Well, we'll have a link on the show notes for that. How to play guitar.
Yeah, for sure.
And workshops. I hear that you go to the Songwriters Roundtable once a month.
Yeah, once a month.
Yeah.
It's my favorite
so far.
The
meetup.
Cool.
Right.
Yeah.
And other workshops you've taken?
Yeah, the first workshop that I went to was the Song Studio one, which I think a lot of people on your show have been to.
A few people have been to it. And Blair Packham
absolutely.
Is one of the showrunners.
Yeah, Blair Packham and Rick Emmett. And I was lucky to be in. So in the mornings, they would do these similar songwriting, critiquing moments. And Blair's hosted one, and Rick's hosted one, and they'd get guests that would also host, I think.
So that's the Rick Emmett from
Triumph.
From Triumph, yeah. Folks. Are you listening? Rick Emmett. Was running your workshop.
He was great, actually.
And you have a showcase night on the Thursday that week, because Phil and I went to it, and they had this amazing band, and apparently Rick was supposed to be guitar, but he sent a sub in. That guy was amazing. So that's such a cool thing. Did you take part in that, too, the showcase?
Yeah, the showcase that would be at Hughes Room.
Yeah.
Both years.
Yeah. So cool.
It's great.
So do you recommend that summer workshop?
Oh, absolutely.
What's it called again? Let's
Song Studio.
Songstudio.ca.
I'm pretty sure it's songstudio.ca.
Check it out.
Yeah, no, everyone who's taken it has said it was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even workshop on like when you show up at the workshop, you hand the band your lead sheet, and which you just learned how to do like 3 days ago, right? Like you learn how to do a proper lead sheet, right?
Well, actually, the 2 years that I had been, we weren't taught. So really, luckily, you'd created a community, so you kind of go to everybody. Hey, who knows how to write a worksheet?
Cool.
Right.
And this band was so cracked that they no rehearsal. You hand them the lead sheet, and then they just, like, they've been playing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
The way around these things.
Yeah, I remember I gave the band my song, and Rick looked at it and was like, oh, it's like All on the Watchtower chords. I got it. And he just went nuts on that song. It was amazing.
Very cool.
Does it throw you off a bit to have Rick Emmett playing behind you?
Yeah.
You're up there singing your little song, you know, like.
So the thing you were giving the band was called lead sheets.
I guess that's the name for it.
Right. Yeah. Chart. And what would those be?
So what would happen is most people, they write out their songs with just lyrics, but then you would also need the chords, the leading chords. And you usually break out the... you know what? I think I might have to pass it to you, Phil.
I can tell you how I write them.
Okay.
So this would be what you call the
lead sheet.
The lead sheet would be just, it would say, say you had four bars of D, you write D, and then repeat, 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 a slash, and then the E. So there's no lyrics on a chord chart. It's a back, you know, when people say, do you have your own charts? You know, jazz singers and that, they said, I've got my own charts. Here they are, hand them around wherever they go. And it takes time and effort to write out those charts. But the chart also has the little bit of lyric. So the band knows where you are and where they're to be.
Yeah,
not full lyric, just to suggest it. And it has markings in for crescendo or just
break
and all that, tacit and stuff. But it mainly has just the map of the chord progression is what they really want.
Yeah,
especially
so you'd have
the
like
bass player and the guitar.
So you'd have like a C, and then you'd have four slashes for four beats.
Right.
Four bars.
No, for four beats.
Oh, four beats?
Yeah, because if you have if you're chord changes on the fourth on beat four,
right.
You'd want to have it on top of that.
Yeah.
And also sometimes they'll give you, if you have a specific rhythm, if you have like, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, you'd actually put in like, you know, just slashes, but you'd, you know, you'd tie them together like an eighth note or a 16th note.
So people actually change their chord in the middle of a bar?
Some people do.
I should try that.
Yes.
I should try that.
It's not a bad idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's the weird
thing called rhythm.
About it. So once you get used to writing these sheets, and sure, you have this band that can like follow anything and everything, then you might go back and you hang out with your friends who want to jam, and you give them your sheet, and if it doesn't have like a very obvious pattern, it could be really hard for them to follow. And what that does then for your songwriting, once you've learned how to do these sheets, is you start thinking, well, wait a second, maybe I should make them more repetitive. Maybe I should simplify my songs. It's really weird that once you start trying to
communicate, and
work with other musicians, you start questioning whether or not you're going too far with your I don't know, experimental music or not.
Well, you shouldn't change that.
No. Yeah, certainly.
But that's the great thing about if you
don't
you know, when you work with a band and the band gets really good, one of the great things is that everyone sort of knows what the other person kind of naturally does.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it a lot easier to kind of get to a completed, because he knows, it's, you know, the guitarist always hits the, you know, he likes to hit the four really hard. So you just, you sort of know that's going to happen.
Right.
So it's like anyone, you sort of get to know the person. And
now, Phil, if you're writing a chart for, say, a saxophone, you have to write that in B flat. You can't just write that in C. It's not a C instrument, right?
Yeah. I mean, some of them actually are really, like most of the people I've worked, like Martin Vandeventer was a guest many years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
I would give him stuff in C, and he would just, you know, the horn guys are always, you know, transposing stuff. So he'd just take out a pencil and just, you know, kind of pencil in on top of the stuff.
They prefer if we did it, though, probably.
Yeah, they could. But, I mean, you know, horn players generally are fairly musically trained because you kind of have to be.
They're always translating, aren't they?
So they're pretty good at translating.
Mm-hmm. So when did you start writing songs, David St. Bernard?
I started writing them maybe 15 years ago.
Your own stuff?
My own stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
And it came together really, I mean, I liked singing other people's songs, and I loved getting into the lyrics. And it was only, I think, when I started playing guitar to play covers, and then I realized that I also kept a journal, that sometimes I started trying to be super crafty or whatever, that I thought, well, why don't I put the two together? Mm-hmm. And that's when songs started.
Oh, you started with
out.
Lyrics. There were lyrics in your journals, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, as you start journaling, you start trying to be poetic at times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I've never journaled. I really probably should try doing that.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea for songwriters.
Yeah. So what is your songwriting process like? Or do you write every day, or?
It's got to be the mood. Something has to be big enough for me to really care to write something. Or I might write down a line and be blown away by my own genius. No, whatever. but sometimes you hit something that's like, this is actually really good. Yeah. I got to make this work. And sometimes I end up spending like years working just to expand on one single idea that I really like.
Does it always start with an idea or a feeling?
It does. It's kind of a dual process because that's the lyric side.
Yeah.
And then there's the music side where you're just jamming on a guitar and then something sounds interesting and you just start expanding that.
So one of your songs could have come out of playing around on the guitar as opposed to journaling. It can start either way. Is there a way it usually starts, though?
I think the thing about it is I wouldn't take a guitar tune and just start fiddling with words on top of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Phil does that.
I've had trouble doing that.
Phil does the whole arrangement.
So if you're fiddling around the guitar, you'll go back to your journal or your notes and think, hey, this idea fits pretty well with this
group. You build it out.
Exactly.
And then, that's a good idea.
So the architecture of your song is really lyrically driven then.
It's very lyrically
verse,
driven.
Verse, bridge.
So you're building up sort of like a catalog of lines and ideas in this journal?
Yeah.
Kind of how do you save them? Are they on paper or in your computer?
I have books and books.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Old-fashioned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I still have good handwriting because
really?
Of
it.
Really? Yeah.
You don't write on the computer at all, then?
I have trouble writing on the computer.
Yeah.
I have a weird process. I will go to a karaoke bar by myself with a book, and I will listen to what people are singing, and I'll sometimes be inspired there, but I'll be writing at a karaoke bar by myself.
Your own songs?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. You don't get up and sing then, or they start to be suspicious?
I definitely sing.
Oh, you do. Okay.
Yeah.
What's that guy in the corner writing about?
So when you were doing cover songs, you said you were inspired lyrically by the people you were covering. Who was it you were covering?
Oh, well, I would cover people like I would get into the acoustic versions of Incubus songs, for instance, or John Mayer came out, and so I had to get into that.
Tom Waits. Tom Waits, right?
Definitely Tom Waits.
You're a big fan.
Yeah. What a master.
Yeah. And sometimes I might take a song that's not acoustic and try to convert it into just a single guitar
like what?
Performance.
Like a power rock thing?
My favorite one that I did was Nick Cave's Your Funeral, My Trial.
Oh, wow.
And that's a piano song with a lot more things on it.
Mm.
But I was able to get it onto guitar. And I it's so much fun to play for me.
Oh, cool.
See, that's what they say. We've had people in here saying, how do you get famous? You do covers on YouTube, right? Covers, because then people are hooked into your style.
Yeah.
But you do something. Who was it we were talking to?
Jacob Moon.
Jules.
Yeah. Well, we talked to Jacob Moon about that as well.
A number of, who?
Jacob Moon,
yeah. Yes. That you basically get known because you're very clever. Like, did you put that on YouTube, that version?
I did. It was a live version. It was floppy, in my opinion, how it came out.
Okay.
Great.
So I'm not famous for that.
We want to
hear
a song. Yeah, we hear a song.
What are you going to do first?
So the first song I'm going to do is, it's called The City Song.
Okay.
And
are you going to play your guitar?
I hope so.
Okay.
I'm going to bring it up here.
Okay.
I guess I'll let the song speak for itself, and then we'll speak to the song later.
Sure. You know, as we do in the Songwriters Roundtable, sometimes we ask, is there any feedback you're looking for right now, or just unqualified praise?
No, it's not for the unqualified praise. I think I tried to bring out some songs that are challenging, as in it's not just a typical structure. So, but then it's not always complete. I think because there's so much going on, the question is, well, is it polished with all the complexities?
Okay. Okay, so that's a learning point for us to listen to. Let's hear it. Here we go. The City Song by David St. Bernard.
I must look stupid with my face against the window, but the glitter of the city lights is like a glimmer of the busy life, where the neon signs compete with graffiti. The streetcar's a billboard, billboard's a TV. Sooner or later, the traffic light will sell you a signal. There's a cafe every corner, for the world works on caffeine and rests on cigarettes just to get through the day. And I pinch my pennies here and there to blow a buck on alcohol at the bars that keep me awake till half past three. And I can't see my own carbon feet. I'm just a cog in this lean machine. But the bike lane vegan, feministic, bleeding green heart hipsters, yeah, they keep on popping out of the woodwork all the same. But everything I ask for, it's everything I ask for, the city. Everything I ask for, and everything I didn't ask for. With the stars you meet on the street outnumber the ones in the sky, and the trees in cement boxes hang their head in shame, and I can't sleep at night. I can't turn off the white noise, so turn up the music like everybody else. And now with all this music memorized, I can't hear myself think, so I'll scream whatever's on my mind. Oh, where I can't see my own carbon feet, when I'm just a cog in this lean machine. But the bike lane vegan, feministic, bleeding green heart hipsters, yeah, they keep on popping out of the woodwork all the same.
Very cool. That was The City Song by David St. Bernard.
What a brilliant tune.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, no, it reminded me a lot of
beat, eh?
Reminded me a lot of Lighthouse.
Yeah, it's a horn section, that's all.
Yeah. You know, and I love that song. It was interesting, but it didn't sound forced, and it didn't, like, it was catchy all the way through.
Yeah.
But it was unexpected, which is a very hard balance.
It was relentless, like the city. Yeah. You know, that driving rhythm, a beautiful guitar in your break, where you did a very simple thing. You just played a few bass grace notes in there, right, to give a little bit of break from the onslaught of lyric. Like, it's solid lyric, and there's lots of lyric. I love the bike lane vegan feministic bleeding green heart hipsters. You're not one then.
I mean, I'm not a bike lane, but I do ride a bike.
Okay.
Are you vegan?
No, I'm not vegan.
Okay.
All right. No, it's got, I don't know, that rhythm is what caught me first. I want to hear this whole song. I just want to go on the ride, you know?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It is interesting the way you started out. You got that very kind of square riff on the guitar, right? And it's catchy and everything. And then your lyric and your melody just start meandering.
Which is right? So cool.
Which is really cool. And you're like, oh, wait, where's this going? Oh, that's kind of interesting. Oh, that's a cool line.
And there are a few chord left turns as well, weren't there?
Like, yeah, right, absolutely. I mean,
like,
it was like...
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were some of, just complex. For the home listener there, what key is that written in?
So it starts in G.
Yeah.
But then once it hits the chorus, it jumps to A.
Oh.
And it stays in A for the rest of the song.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love, you had this really interesting rhyme with City Lights and Busy Life.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was, which I thought was really sweet.
Half rhyme.
Yeah, because you didn't have a lot of, you know, tight rhymes between it, but it kind of didn't, like, it, and when you did it, it was kind of nice, but it wasn't, you know, like, you know, Sting has those, like, you know, rhyming couplets, and it gets a bit much sometimes. This is, you know, you have, like, Machine and then All the Same, which is a really soft rhyme in your
Very
chorus.
Soft, yeah, yeah.
There is one thing I was going to say, you know, at the end of your second verse. Because on your first verse, you had these beautiful, fantastic melodies. It's almost like, you know, a hockey player when they're, you
Stick
know, deking around mm-hmm. and move. Like, that's what it was. It's just fantastic melody. And I think you could have actually set up the chorus a bit better because it kind of went right into it. And it was like, and it's obviously you can do it because you've done it like all the way through. And it was just at this point, you just kind of went, there we go.
So I'm actually wondering something about the chorus, as it were. Like, okay, so conventionally, we often say, you know, you want your central idea, get your title in there, yada yada yada, and that's sort of at least the germ of a chorus, or maybe it's the entire chorus. Did you actually set yourself out of your way to say I'm not going to do a conventional chorus?
No, it's not that I go out of my way not to do choruses. It's that I have a lot of trouble writing choruses. That's really it. So if I can get away without a chorus, then I go for it, to be honest.
So it's a B section.
But you don't prefer it
It's just
that
a
way.
B section.
I would love to be able to write choruses, to be honest.
Okay.
But in this case, choruses, just being the hook, like I find...
You'd like your songs to be more memorable because they'd have a memorable
Because I'm really
chorus.
Hesitant
so.
To say that's what this song is missing, but then I'm like, maybe you didn't want that in the first place, so hey, cool.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you know? I think, I mean, In the City was...
Yeah, the second
well,
the, part. The,
you know, it could have been a chorus, and I mean,
yeah,
I feel
the
like,
everything I asked for is pretty is catchy and repetitive, and that's kind of chorusy.
Yeah, and just the fact that I repeat that the bike lane vegan, like that's probably the most powerful punchy line.
Yes,
so that's what ended up being repeated. That's the closest I've got for a chorus.
So,
but it's more like a pre-chorus.
So, but Phil,
if anything.
Are you saying in this part there's a cafe on every corner of the world works on caffeine that he could have amped that up as a pre-chorus?
No.
Where would it be?
The second verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the end, where he says, "And I scream, what's ever on my mind." There's not because there's you have a really nice sort of jump from your first chorus to your bridge or sorry to, so, apparently I've had a stroke from your first verse to your chorus there is a bit of a jump. There's like this musical sort of center change which is really cool, but there's not that same change from the second verse into the chorus, so it just kind of goes into the chorus.
Absolutely.
I see what you're talking about now.
Oh,
now and I think you could have done the same kind of chorus, even if it winds up going to a different key.
You can go to
you
the
can
B
still
in
do that
case,
same
right?
thing. And that's really cool. Actually, I love when people do that.
I know definitely just the scream what's on my mind back to the what we're calling the chorus isn't as smooth as the rest of it. Like everything else is
it's a bit of a
So just I would just do the chorus, but just raise it up.
Raise it up
like
another tone.
A tone, basically.
Yeah. So you're basically escalating throughout the entire song. You're stepping up.
I think I could handle that. I know that I used to play this with the capo up a whole tone.
Okay.
So I can probably, if I don't do that, I could probably go up one more.
Yeah.
So may I point out a really wonderful lyric? I'm a lyricist at heart, David, so I really appreciate lyrics. Listen to this. The neon signs compete with graffiti. The streetcar's a billboard. The billboard's a TV. And sooner or later, the traffic lights will sell you the signal.
Yeah.
Because you look out here at, Dundas Square, which is right outside the studio here, the billboards are TVs now. So they're huge.
Yeah, that's true.
Big screen TVs, basically. And then the streetcar is a billboard because sometimes they're wrapped entirely in advertising with this new modern, what do you call that, Phil, that new modern thing, vinyl? It's a vinyl wrap, isn't
it? Vinyl wrap, yes.
Spinal Tap.
I got to also point out that window is a soft rhyme with signal.
Yes, which is cool.
Is that the window of the streetcar?
Yeah, yeah.
What's great, a lot of people have written songs about the city, and it's very easy to fall into doing cliches and, you know, be kind of gone. But all this stuff is original. Like, it's all new, and that's what great poetry
unique.
Is. It's,
yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah, yeah.
It's like I haven't heard these words put together to describe a city, but I knew exactly what you're meaning. It was just a
so David was just saying he's looking out the window of the airplane. Now, we wouldn't know that. Is that important to know?
No, it's not important. Okay. But I pictured that first part where, like, you're arriving in the city because you've just flown into the city.
Yeah.
I must look stupid with the – you're seeing the bright lights and everything.
Oh, but yeah. I think that would be – I think that would give the song a lift, so to speak, to be set in the airplane, because you could just say you know, something I like, must like stupid with my face pressed. Because we do that, right? At night, we go like, you know, we cover our eyes to try to see through. Oh, my God, look at all those lights down there. You could choose to do that. All I'm saying is because it sets the song in an unexpected place right off the top.
Mm. Yeah,
right?
You know,
but it's not necessary.
But there's so much street level reference
in
here.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Don't tell anybody that you're in an airplane.
All right, never mind.
Pretend it was a streetcar.
No, I think what he did was perfectly
well,
good.
People won't know.
As soon as you face against the window glitter of the streetlight, as soon as you get to the traffic light, you realize he's in a car, if you want to put him anywhere at all.
Yeah, or a bus.
Or a bus. But it's kind of inconsequential. Like, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, like, inspiration for the line came from me thinking of a plane. But yeah, let's put them back on a streetcar.
Or you could say, this streetcar is a billboard. One little word to place the character there. This streetcar is a billboard. The billboard's a TV. And from there you go. Little choices you could make. Anyway, I know what Phil is talking about, Lighthouse, because that's ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And if someone was doing a Lighthouse arrangement, they'd have a horn section going
This song
needs a
band.
It needs a band. It needs a band because it's kind of almost like who's the dude from Hawaii who's a huge hit? He's 5 foot 5 years old. Five foot five.
I don't know.
You know.
Magnum Johnson?
No.
Magnum
no.
P.I.?
What? No, anyway, it doesn't matter.
No idea.
Lady Diana? I'm sorry, what are we talking
Bruno
about?
Bruno Mars, for God's sakes.
He's from Hawaii?
Yes.
Oh,
Bruno
damn.
Mars, on the Grammys a couple of years ago, had this smoking band with the horn section that was doing all the choreography. I can just imagine you as the Bruno Mars with this band and these horn shots coming in. You've got to try that one day. Get some horn players. Has this been recorded yet?
Yeah. So I met somebody at the songwriter circle last year, and we were planning on building it up, but that hasn't happened yet. Okay. I fell off for a bit, so I got to get back into it.
You can do that with MIDI, can't you? Like,
you can actually
MIDI horns.
Well, you can, but sound. You know, actually, it's because I was in a reggae band, my own reggae band, and we actually got a lot of horn players, and they're actually fairly not easy to find. But if you put an ad in, I don't know, I guess you don't do it now, magazine, but you know,
Gigi,
the original places, there's lots of like students who need to have more practice, and you can get some fantastic.
And that's not to say that this song doesn't work perfectly well with you in the guitar.
Yes,
it sounds great,
but you can just imagine. You can imagine a bass going and a bit of snare. I was like, this thing would rock and roll. Should I tell people what we're doing here tonight?
Absolutely,
time?
Bruce. Thank you.
For those of you who are just joining us, either on the live broadcast or the podcast, we'll remind you, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce Newell and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in beautiful Toronto, where the trees are covered with ice because it rained and then it froze. It's a crazy winter here. And streamed on songtalk.ca/livestream. Tonight, our guest is David St. Bernard. Do you say St. Bernard or just St. Bernard?
Just St. Bernard.
And you're sick of the dog jokes, I'm sure. He does not have a little jug around his neck, a little cask around his neck. No, he doesn't. I can't believe I said that even. Don't forget,
keep not joking
we
about
love to hear from you. So
Bruce,
he's going to kill me
funny.
Now. It's sort of funny. Don't forget, we love to hear from you. So tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio Live or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca. And we can actually share your thoughts in real time during the show. And you can find the links to all the products, books, web services, and T-shirts soon. We mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page, songtalk.ca/resources. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have, it's going to be February 14th, next week at Ton, remember? That's Valentine's Day,
oh,
and the
yes.
title of the show, it's a theme show. You know you love them. Love songs, we love to love.
Songs of love.
Songs of love. It's each of the producers, each of the crew, the whole team is going to choose one song that they... I'm just going to bring in as a gift, and then we're going to listen to that and talk a bit about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll discuss
it. So we'd love to know, actually, what your favorite love songs are.
Tell us.
You know, so send
us
an email.
Play them. We'll talk about them.
We'll certainly mention them.
Oh, yeah.
Please do. In fact, we'll get David and who are you still here, Jordan? Yeah. So Jordan will give us his favorite love song. And on the 21st of February, we have Audio Insurgency coming back, which is Alon Rodovinsky and...
His Russian
cohort,
friend,
Russian friend.
Ivan
the Russian.
Ivan the Russian.
He does an amazing imitation of a Russian.
He's also a wrestler.
He's a wrestler. He does a great imitation of a Russian.
Not here on the show, I hope.
If you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup. That's coming up. Well, my God, it's coming up next week. How did that happen? On Wednesday, February 15th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the beautiful Transact Club. It's free to join on Meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup, and you can join the meetup there and come along, come on out. Look how good David is.
Yes.
He's only been there like, 10 times?
Yeah. That's a star.
Back to you, Neil.
Thank you, Bruce. And Phil, you got some news for us, do you?
Well, yeah, I got a couple of tweets in. Sharon sent one in. Do the math. 3 + 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 = the answer is 3 hosts, 1 social media, 1 techie, 1 songwriter, and 1 guitar equals great fun.
Aww.
Wow, Sharon.
Oh.
And
Sharon,
by the way,
roll tonight.
And she also sent another one, says, and by the way, great song and great voice.
Oh. Nice. Sharon, make sure you show your work now.
That's right.
Otherwise, we don't get full marks.
Nice.
David,
nice.
You have a unique voice. We could talk that. We'll talk about that when we come back.
But I don't know if anyone's heard about the big kerfuffle about Jimmy Webb being denied an award.
Something about this. Yes.
Yes. So Kanye West wrote a song called Famous.
Leave it to Kanye.
Of which there are 12 songwriters credited. So 12 songwriters.
Committee.
Yeah.
By committee.
So each of them get about 5% of the song. But Jimmy Webb, whose song was sampled and is actually the major part of the song.
It's the hook.
Which is the hook, which everyone's grasping onto, did not get any kind of credit.
How come?
He's got snubbed by the Grammys.
Or money?
Well,
he got money, maybe.
I think he gets the money because they have to be all samples have to be cleared.
Which one of his songs is sampled? Do you know?
Well, he's written, he's written stuff for like Wichita Lineman, mm-hmm. Galveston. By the time I get to Phoenix,
and of course, someone MacArthur left the cake out in the rain. Right?
Yeah.
MacArthur.
What a weird song. What the heck?
We discussed that on an earlier show.
What's really the lesson here? Don't work with Kanye. Like, what's the lesson?
Well, no, I think it's an interesting point. It's the industry. Because, if you have to clear samples, because if you don't clear samples,
it's my understanding is he got the money for the samples, but
he did not get a writer's credit.
He didn't get the writer's credit.
He didn't get the writer's credit.
Even though it's major.
Would that be a lesson to you, David? Don't let them take your sample.
You want them to take your sample because you can make crap loads of money.
That
can be really good.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting idea where if, this huge songwriter has written all the stuff, mm-hmm. got snubbed by the Grammys.
When are the Grammys?
There's an online petition somewhere.
I think it was.
It's done?
Yeah.
Is the Grammys done?
I don't know.
I boycotted it.
I don't keep track of these things.
I'm glad I did. I didn't. I'm sure they felt that.
Okay. Is that all, Phil?
It's just an interesting point. But also there's 12 songwriters for a song.
Yeah, song by committee.
Yeah, well, they're getting 8% or something.
I mean, 4 or 5, they all get 5%.
Yeah.
But I mean, just like 4 or 5 people, I thought was a lot.
It is. 12 is corporate. Yeah.
I think a lot of times it's also the producer. Producers sometimes they put themselves on the songwriting.
You're in the room, you get a songwriting credit.
It just feels like
my name's Jimmy Webb.
That'd be amazing, right? You put down like 1 or 2 lines. You're like, yep, now I'm on that song.
Well, at a certain point, sometimes it is hard and it's kind of fuzzy lines to determine who contributed what because your idea could have fed off of someone else's idea
and it may not
have made it into the cut, whatever, that sort of thing. So for the most part, I think people just say everyone's even.
Well, yeah. Phil, when you had a band and you were writing together, you'd bring a tune in and everybody would contribute. Did it just say by the name of the band or did you get a...
Yeah, we decided and that? Actually, if you are in a band, this is something to think about, is to have this discussion before you start. We did exactly the same thing that the Tragically Hip does, and that's basically everyone gets an even cut. Okay. Just because it's easy, you don't have to worry about it. But I mean, I would write songs, and then you know, Mark J would write songs, and it would bring them in, and you know, it's you can't really sort of say who, you know, what the percentage is. Some bands try to work out percentages, but I just think it's a lot easier. And that way, everyone kind of is also in on it. You know, everyone's putting
everyone
in their energy.
Feels part of the team that way. You know?
Yeah.
You don't get anyone excluded or anything.
Speaking of that, David, have you collaborated on songwriting?
I've tried a few times, but actually that's the hardest thing for me to do, and I'd like more practice collaborating.
So what was the
issue? How is it hard?
Well, when I talk about collaboration, I guess maybe not just the writing part. If I join somebody else on their idea, I'm fine with adding to it. But I find when I have when I'm the creator of the song, I have these ridiculous standards and I want too much that I run away from people that don't have that same, drive.
Well, there has to be chemistry, there has to be a fit, there has to be a business decision and all that, right? I've tried writing with various people and sometimes it just doesn't work. I think that's common. What do you get out of collaborating, though? If you've tried it, have you had some positive results?
You get a song that's done, as opposed to a song that, even though you've gotten 95% of it done, you still feel like you've got to put in another, you know.
Now, do you feel that other people's input sort of changes the song too much?
Changes
it from your vision?
When they're pulling it away from what the vision was at first, that's what's troubling. And I think what I need to start learning how to do is to stop being so clingy to the idea that I had at first.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's tough. It's tough because you have this idea and you think you've explored it. And it's going to sound different than what you thought it was going to. But you have to eventually have the trust that it's going to be better than what you thought.
It's probably helpful to show up without having invested too much time and effort into what you're bringing to the table, right?
Bring a sketch.
Like,
right?
I've got this riff, I've got this sketch, I've got two lines of a lyric. Let's work with it, right? And it's clear that this needs development. Like it's not like here's a finished song and then everyone starts tearing it to pieces there's two ways to work.
It's also kind of that Buddhist concept of you don't concern yourself with the outcome or the ending of it. You're only concerned with the process you're in. You let go of the result, right? And I know that's that guarding the result. I want it to end up this way is, you know, you're a control freak, just like me, right? Because everybody has that because it's your baby, like you think. And there's nothing wrong with not collaborating as well, right? Because Paul Simon's done fairly well. And other artists who don't really regularly collaborate, there's nothing wrong with that. I think what's interesting when I've collaborated is that it's something entirely different than I would have expected.
Yeah.
And that's fun. That's just fun.
Yeah. So I think also the thing about collaborating is that you really get the most out of it is when you just bring something like you think is barely an idea. You go, oh, this is nothing. It turns into something amazing.
Yeah.
Exactly,
you know,
right?
Because that's when everyone's putting on your score. Like, I never would have thought of it.
So when you're writing by yourself, David, are you editing a lot then?
Yeah, over and over.
So you never had that, like, lightning reaction where you just had a song pour out of you in an afternoon kind of thing?
Only once that ever happened.
How did that song work out?
That song, it seems to be the most popular song of mine, but it's also because it's a song about Harry Potter. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That one just came to you.
Yeah.
As a gift.
We were standing out to get the sixth book of Harry Potter. I was just there to give my girlfriend support, and I had a guitar, and I just started singing about the books, and I had like 90% of it done that day.
Well, you should definitely put that on YouTube, because I think lots of people would link to that. They love Harry Potter.
I have it on my Bandcamp, and it is the only song that somebody has bought off me.
Right.
I have, as a professional musician, have made $1 online.
Woohoo!
Whoa. You can buy some alcohol, like you said here.
Yeah.
You save up your pennies.
That's awesome.
Where can you get alcohol for a buck?
Yeah.
Let's hear another song, shall we?
Why don't we have a song? Enough talk. This is song talk, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Let the song do the talking.
So the next song is
The next song is it's called Tell Me You Love Me. And I'm tempted to put in brackets Love in Progress.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the bracket thing. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Love in progress. This is going to be very interesting. Okay. Are you always capoing? For those of you who can't see because it's radio.
They'll see on YouTube.
He's capoed on the second fret.
For those of you scoring at home tonight.
So,
and also you can get the lyrics on the website, songtalk.ca.
That's right.
Songtalk.ca. They're always there, almost always there on our website.
There. Always.
As you're listening to the live stream, you can see David's lyrics, and there's a bouncing ball. No, there isn't. So here's David St. Bernard again with Tell Me You Love Me, Love in Progress.
Tell me you love me for the first time, when you can't hold it in. Seal is broken, the floodgates come open, let the dance of emotion begin. Tell me with flashes of lightning, come on, call to my shadows of doubt. No time to wait for angels of fate, that this story should be straightened out. And just like the rain falls down on a mountain, just like lovers who've only begun, show me the way that leaves an impression, and I'll be the one. Tell me you love me differently. Life is all about change. Pick your words like a puzzle and struggle to show how love is best rearranged. Tell me without any sugar. Say this salt has lost its savor. Walking on eggshells so that we stick around won't do any favors. The rain comes down on those mountains just like lovers. No more can be done. So show me the pain that leaves an obsession. I'll be the one. Say you love me, then say you don't. Keep me guessing until I won't. I'm not concerned with each petal pulled out. It's the last one that counts. It's the last one that counts.
Tell Me, Love Me, Love in Progress, David St. Bernard on guitar and voice.
Great tune.
Great tune.
I love the fact that your stuff doesn't sound regular, but it doesn't sound forced. Like, it's catchy. It's like these unexpected chord changes, but they still, you know, it doesn't sound like some kind of weird chord progression. It doesn't sound strange.
Abrupt,
you know?
Changes.
Abrupt.
They
work. But what's also interesting is he wrote a song in 3/4. Or 6/8, whatever
six,
you want to call it. But I love that because so much is written in 4/4.
Yeah.
And I struggle to write in 3/4. And when I do it, I go, why wasn't I thinking of that? Because it's so interesting. But there's something I wanted to say about the key you chose to sing it in. So you capoed it up too. So you started the song at the top of your range. And I thought, that's beautiful. And then I thought, that's the top of his range. Where is he going to go when he wants to do variations on the theme? There's no upper headroom. There's no headroom, right? So just a tip, I would say start it. Take that capo off and start it a little bit down, because what you want to do, I think, in your ornamentation and in your variation is not having to go down on variation, but to go up, because you want to build. And God forbid you want to do a, you know, a modulation. There's nothing, there's no room, right? So this is from a singer to a singer, I'm just saying, right? Could you do that just for us for a moment? Just play without the capo and just play us what it sounds like?
But is that actually at the top of your range?
Yes, it's close.
I don't know.
Well, no, it's very close.
Pretty close.
Yeah, I heard him do a little falsetto-y thing on top, but it was not strong, right?
I put it up because I was told that that's a nice place for my voice to be, but you're right, it's at the top.
It's a nice place for your voice to be at some place in the song, which is the big point of the song, the top of the song, right? Because that's when you go, oh my God, that's beautiful. But the thing is, like, songs really, in my opinion, are meant to tease the listener to wait for the most beautiful part of your voice.
So are you
right?
essentially saying, Bruce, that the chorus could use a little bit more of
a lift? And you see, you didn't have room to give the chorus a lift, and it's a beautiful chorus. Just try a little bit of the verse at that level. The second verse and go into the chorus.
Tell me with flashes of lightning. Yeah. Come on, call to my shadows of doubt. No time to wait for angels of fate. This story should be straightened out. And just like the rain falls down on a mountain, just like lovers who've only begun.
Okay, that's enough. But you see, you'd have some. You could
have some room for some money notes or something.
Yeah,
if you
there's
to
some
throw
room.
That in there.
There's a room, and remember that the higher you go with your voice, there's more emotion, right? And also, this is what I believe, that in a performance, you want to go from A to B. Now, we had a show on ambient last night, and it was corrected. You want to go to A in ambient. It stays the same, and that's the point. A song like this is so emotional, so beautifully written. The sugar, say the salt's lost its flavor, and you know it's about love and all that, that really it's the melodic lifts that are going to lift the lyrics up into the feeling part in a person's body, because we feel music. We don't think it. We feel it. And I could even say that you could take that down a key and start in that baritone. Because when you speak, you have this incredible baritone. So if you started in a baritone, tell me you love me for the first time when you can't hold it in, and then you move up, maybe do a slight key change or add, take it somewhere, and just like the rain falls, and it's whoa!
Because there's actually not a melodic shift between the verse and the chorus.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could actually.
That's what I'm saying.
You don't necessarily need to do a melodic shift. You could actually just do it just with sort of a dynamic thing.
Yeah.
And one thing I want to mention, because I love your first line, and just like the rain falls down on the mountain. But the second time you do it, you say the rain falls down on the mountain, and that is such a I think you should just repeat that line, and just like the rain falls down on the mountain, because it's such a beautiful line. Whereas the rain falls down on the mountain is kind of a dull line.
That's true.
And it's just it's such a
But you've noticed that he changed up all of the lines in the repeat of the chorus.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just like lovers, we've only begun. Just like lovers, no more can be done. I love that when people do that, though, because pop writing, you're supposed to like, I call it the copy and save.
Yeah.
Right? And you hear that on pop songs, you go, they didn't record that again. They went, I plugged it in, right?
You actually ended the song with a bridge.
I know.
Yeah. Well,
that was great.
Very interesting.
Other people have done that on the show. We've noticed that a couple times.
Not very common, though.
Well, it's like a coda, right?
It's a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
But I think because you don't have very sing-songy kind of choruses, I think you can actually get away. Like, your stuff is kind of a bit more painterly, for lack of a better word. I mean, it's not so much like a pop song, verse, chorus, bridge, first, chorus, end type thing.
Did you think consciously, I'll end on a bridge? No, you just went somewhere and you went, it's it.
And that's the end.
Actually, what happened, I first wrote the song with maybe 9 verses, no chorus, and it was just too versey. So then I had to turn one into the bridge. I had to get rid of some of the verses, and I had to throw a chorus in there because I just felt like, okay, how many times am I going to write a song without a chorus?
Well, it's a folk song then.
Yeah,
it's true.
Typical folk song is,
but it's a great
verses.
I mean, it is a great chorus, and just like the rain. But I mean, you could actually just deliver that chorus with just much more energy.
Yeah, I like the idea of adding, like thinking about the melody again and how to make
start it lower. Just for me, just when you're rehearsing at home, try it in a lower key because there's no capo now, so take it down a tone and start in your baritone. The other thing is, I think you need some variation on melody. I don't usually talk about melody, but I am tonight. tell me with flashes of lightning, tell me you love me for the first time. And then you said, tell me you love me differently, tell me without any sugar. And like the third time and then the fourth time especially, I was hungry for a variation on the
first
line. Really?
Because, I mean, there's so many variations in his verse. Like, he doesn't have repeated verses, though.
I know, but I mean, like, it was just...
Like, there was, it was different every time.
The words.
No, the words, but even the melody.
The melody was everything.
The melody, I swear. Listen back on the iPod, iTunes. What's it called? what is it called? Podcast.
The phone device?
No, you know that, right? You start each verse with the same melody, right?
Yeah.
That's you where start, but first, by the time he finishes the verse, it's
I know,
way different.
But I'm saying that variation on the melody at the top of the verse brings about a nice feeling. Because, it's okay. You can be wrong, Phil.
No, I think that's... Because you have so much other variation within the verse, that's you want to have the first line of the verse being the key that you grab in your...
What do you think, Jordan?
The thing for me that's interesting about this song, I kind of like this one better than Your City Lights. And because I'm a bit of a stickler for structure, right?
Yeah.
And this one's got a little more structure.
Yes, it
to
does.
It, right? And but I think the whole thing in your mind about complexity versus non-complexity,
mm-hmm.
I think this song does a better job of it because there's complexity at the microscopic level. Like, there's some interesting chord twists and melodic shifts and, well, not even melodic shifts, but like there's some interesting melodies and interesting chord shifts and things, right?
Yeah.
At the macro level, you've got complexity. Because the when you come back to the verse after the chorus, it's a different verse, chord wise and things like that. So you're introducing even more complexity. And then structurally it's complex because you're ending on a C section, and then you never go back to the B section and that sort of thing. So you've got complexity from micro and macro. I mean, I would be really curious to hear a song that's microscopically complex, really interesting chord patterns and interesting melodies and things. But at the macro level, it's fairly conventional structure-wise.
That's interesting.
And
have a contrast between the two.
It kind of the singer-songwriter I'm thinking of is Braden Mitchell, who we've had on the show a couple of times. He's got that kind of thing going. Microscopically, he's complex. At the macro level, he just keeps it pretty simple, but it still comes across. Like,
do you think the listener wants that structure to take them through the song?
I think it has to do with that expectation versus surprise, right? You can surprise
them
at the small level.
Audio signposts for people?
Well, yeah, you want the signposts so that people know that the catchy chorus is coming again and here it is, but in its detail, it's like really, really
always entertaining.
That's a question, but I mean, this could also just be like, you know, I think there's a certain question of style.
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe like your style is kind of more like this, because this does, I mean, they certainly do seem very similar approaches to songwriting. Like, they seem like these could be in all one verse, you know, like in one sort
but you
of
have, you have structure. It's not the conventional one of pop songs.
Yeah.
So you have a, like, when, for you listeners out there, when we talk about an A section and a B section, often that's the verse and the chorus. And a C section, which sounds like, you know, something different, is actually a third structure, which is sometimes called the bridge, sometimes called the coda if it's the end, and sometimes it's even an introductory verse, like in the old songs written in the 30s and 40s.
Or sometimes it's a bridge thing that repeats twice, in which case it's just kind of a C-section.
It's a different section, and it has a different feel. And this is based on the whole thing I keep harping on for 157 shows, is that people like to hear changes. You know, David Bowie said it best. But he stuttered. Changes, you know, because it's the changes that catch your ear and you go, oh, I didn't see that coming, right?
The worry is if it's going too many times in too many different directions.
But I think you're good enough so that you can actually have a lot of changes and it doesn't sound forced, but it still sounds poppy.
Doesn't sound gimmicky or anything.
Yeah, because sometimes, like I know when I was starting to write songs, you know, you're getting tired of doing the same chord progression, so you try something really kind of forced. And it sounded forced because it just didn't sound natural.
Maybe we should let David talk for a moment here. So, David, what is your approach vis-a-vis complexity? Is it conscious or is it just come out of you and you go, I'll go with it?
I guess I lean towards complexity, and then I have a moment where I go, wait a second, this is getting too complex. And the hope is, because the songs that I like, I listen to over and over, and eventually what was once complex becomes just habit, or you accept it.
And it's always a question is how much is too much, and that's going to differ from songwriter to songwriter. It's going to differ from listener to listener as well.
But
right?
But for example, who's an artist that writes in a complex style that you, is it Waits or
I don't know
for sure.
Nick Cave does some pretty...
I'm wondering if it, I end up focusing so much on lyrics that, I mean, I might even be blinded sometimes. I mean, I can't.
But, your stuff is musically complex too.
Yeah, that's just because of math and numbers and such. Honestly,
no, you're a fascinating, complex
Phil's been saying, it sounds natural. It sounds
it doesn't sound
like, you know, some weird
like sometimes
equation.
Right. Sometimes jazz does that. You know, jazz.
Yeah.
You know, they try to be really complex, and it sounds like it. I did a tweet a couple of weeks ago saying sometimes jazz just sounds like five people in a room not listening to each other.
Yeah.
You know, and that's bad. But you never sound like that. You always sound like it's really natural. It's a tough thing to do.
You've got a great talent, and I do want to say just before we wrap up here that you have a wonderful voice, and what I'm encouraging you to do, he's blushing, what I want to encourage you to do is play more with the full range of your voice, because your voice is such a great instrument with the guitar, and you have such a good range. You can go from baritone to up to the soprano, not the soprano, but the, what's it called, tenor. You're way up there in the tenor, and then you're into falsetto. You can do all the stuff like the bands do, Maroon 5 and all that. They're all singing. Ah, I don't know why, but they are.
Cool.
Do we have to wrap up now?
Yeah, it's time to wrap up.
Okay.
If you're done.
We could talk all night and not let David talk at all. Thanks for coming, David.
Thank you. This is great.
Yeah, there's about all the time we have. We could go on forever.
You'll have to come back.
Yeah, you definitely have to come back, David. So thank you, David St. Bernard, for being on the show. Awesome stuff.
Woo! Buy his album on Bandcamp, for God's sake.
Yes, please.
We only made a dollar.
Please send us your impressions via Twitter at Songtalk Radio, via email feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube. Come join us at Songtalk Radio. Stop by the site, songtalk.ca, and subscribe to the Songtalk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at the website, guess what? Songtalk.ca. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned. Did we mention any tonight? We're going to put his
book one.
Million Things He Learned
How to Write a Song with Your Guitar.
On our songtalk.ca/resources. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup. That's Wednesday, February 15th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Transat Club in the Annex area of Toronto, very close to the subway. It's free to join on Meetup and free to attend the roundtables.
I'll be there.
Yeah. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all details. Are you hosting that one, Bruce?
That's why you'll be there?
I'll probably be there, too.
We'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto for putting up with all our shenanigans, especially the station's technical officer, Michael Newton, who got the levels going today, and our program director, Alyssa Matthews. Thank you, too, Vanessa Vreeland.
Thank you, Vanessa.
It's her
birthday today.
And happy birthday
to you.
She's handling our social media channels, and thank you to Eitan Ryan for doing our tech tonight, keeping us sounding good.
Thank you.
And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listener, or even if you're not at home. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow Phil
at the Phil Emery.
Follow Bruce.
Bruce Harrett.
Vanessa.
Sunny underscore something.
Vanessa and Eitan.
At Tawny underscore R.
And you can follow myself, Neil, at Mondo Art. And David, you're a Twitter guy.
Yeah, you can follow me at Crikey. It's spelled CHRYCKIE.
Crikey.
Crikey.
That's for the next show. And please stop by the website, songtalk.ca, browse past shows, find out how you can be a guest on this very show. That's all, folks. Tune in next week, same song time, same song channel.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Keep on writing.
Thank you.